please limit your comments to 3 minutes, and at my discretion, you'll be stopped. Please, in keeping with our singleness of purpose, comments should pertain only to suffering and recovery from alcoholism. Also, a lack of profanity offends no one. All right, so Russell is on step nine.
Russell!
Okay. Good evening, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's good to be here again with you guys. And I recognize a lot of the faces. You all have been here before. We're on step nine tonight, but don't hold me to that. You know, at these prices, you can never be sure. I was thinking about when I first started really doing these things. I haven't found necessarily have a drink since January 25th, 1981. What's today? January what?
23rd.
Oh, how do you like that? Sneaking up on me, you know? Two more days. Okay, so I've been around for a while. And by trade, I'm a lawyer, so I'm a paid bullshit artist. You know, I charge per word. And some of you guys believe that. And I once went into court and I said, Judge, I'll be brief. He said, Mr. Spatz, you couldn't say your name in 10 minutes, you know. Whatever. So in any event, but I remember I started doing the steps. I started doing this stuff. And when I had about 3 or 4 years, what was that, like almost, you know, 29, 30 years ago. And there was a gal named, I think it was Harriet Rawls, asked me to do the, God rest her soul. The car room was one of the oldest rooms, still a prominent room in Dade County. And she asked me whether I would do the steps at the car room. And I had been doing step meetings, I suppose they still have them, where it was basically you speak for 20 minutes and then there's comments or stuff like that. And there were certain people that were doing meetings where you speak for an hour, sort of like this one. And, you know, they usually had a lot of time and that kind of stuff. And she asked me, she said, would you do the meeting at the call room, which was a very respected room in Dade County? And she said, and I said, sure. And I said, because my sponsor had told me that whenever anybody asks you anything, you never say no. You know, because, and I said, well, what if I have a valid excuse? He says, you never say no, because he knew I didn't know a valid excuse from an invalid excuse, because I'm an alcoholic. I just know how to excuse myself out of anything. So he said, you just say yes when anybody asks you. So I said, sure, yeah, I can do it. He says, now, so she called me up or something, or she spoke to me like the night before I was supposed to start. She said, you know, Russell, he says, in the Carl Gables group, and I had done all these meetings where you speak for about 15, 20 minutes, like a discussion meeting, and then you pass it around. And she said, you know, in the Carl Gables group, Russell, he says, you speak for the hour. And I said, okay. He says, no. He says, you don't understand. He says, you speak for the hour. You don't pass it around. You don't stop. You don't stop after, you know, 30 minutes or 40 minutes. You speak for the entire hour. Do you understand that? And she had like around 30 years at the time, and she was very intimidating and very well known. She says, you speak for the hour on the step. So I said, sure, yeah, I know. I can do that. So I went that night to the car room. I started up the step series, and there was bunch of people in the room like there is tonight. And I don't know, I think I can't remember which step I was on. I was on the third step or the fourth step or whatever it is. And I just went at it like whole hog. You know, I had the books, the 12 and 12, the 24. I had the whole bit, the big book. And I was quoting things and I was talking about stuff. And I told them, let me tell you something, I told them everything that I knew. Everything I told them about shit I didn't know. I told them stuff that didn't even exist. Anything that could be said about whatever it was, the third step or the fourth step, I told them everything. Everything. It was unbelievable. I didn't leave anything out. And when I was done telling them everything, draining my body of everything, where I was complete blank, I looked up and only 30 minutes had gone by. And they were all doing what you're doing right now. They were like looking at me. I mean, I had told them everything I knew, shit I didn't know. There was like nothing left. I didn't even remember my name. And all I saw is I looked up and there was 30 minutes left and they were staring at me, just like you're staring at me right here. And I had like, I had like three years, 3 to 4 years or something like that. And I was petrified. I mean, we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. We're talking about no place to hide, no place to run. I'm with these 8:30 meetings, and so I don't know what happened, but I just closed my eyes and I said, "God help me, God help me." And I don't know what happened, but it seemed to me like a half an hour or 30 minutes went by or something like that, and then I started talking again. I just started talking until the end, and then it was over for another 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Then it was over. And I couldn't think of words to say during that period of time. All I could say was, "God help me." And I started talking again. And so the thing was over. I finished. And so I walked outside, and everybody was, how they come up to you and say, "Thank you very much, thank you very much, thank you very much." And one of my buddies came up to me and says, "Man, that was good. You did a good job," and everything like that. So I said to him, I said, "Well, what'd you think about that, that thing in the middle, because I'm an alcoholic, I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, I'm sensitive, I'm touchy, take everything personally, I just knew it was just horrible, they were talking bad things, all that sort of stuff, I was self-conscious, and how we are, and I said, "So what did you think about that thing in the middle where it was obvious? That I had no idea what I was saying, because I knew I had no idea what I was saying, and they must have had no idea, I didn't know what I was saying." And he said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, that thing in the middle, that pause, that thing in the middle." He says, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about." He says, "In the middle, I stopped talking, for a few seconds." He says, "Oh, yeah, I thought that was like some sort of dramatic pause or something, And that's how you learn about step three. We're not on step three, but that's how I've learned about step three. In the valleys, you ever hear the 23rd Psalm? "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall not fear, because thou art with me." That's how you learn about step three. You find yourself, or you put yourself in positions where you know that death is imminent. You know you're going to be killed. You know you're going to jail. You know you're going to be evicted. You know you're going to die. Because for people like us, if any problem comes up in your life, if you're an alcoholic, the sentence is death. It's never probation. It's always the worst possible thing that could happen on steroids. And, hey, if you're an alcoholic, you get to go through that for the next 20 years. You get to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat, not being able to go to sleep because you're worried about what's going to happen at 8 o'clock in the morning, or what's going to happen next year, or what's going to happen 2 years from now. You get to wake up and worry about, what's going to happen when you lose this job, or what's going to happen when the check bounces, or what's going to happen if the money doesn't come. You get to live a life of absolute, total, unbelievable fear. The good news is you've been living that life all along anyway, but you've been drinking and drugging over it, so you didn't realize you were living that life, because that's the alcoholic life. The alcoholic life is a life of worry, remorse, fear, and guilt, and anxiety. But if you get drunk as many times as you possibly can, you can hardly even notice it. And you hang around a bunch of guys that talk and think the way you do, it almost like becomes a culture. It becomes part of your personality. You actually become used to living a life of fear. They say fear is the corrosive thread. You can come, it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, they're irritable, they are discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And that's what alcohol did for me. What alcohol did for me is it did something for me that I couldn't do for myself. Allowing me, alcohol was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I probably would have blown my brains out if I didn't find alcohol before I was the age of 18. I had so many fears and worries and all sorts of stuff going on. And, you know, we call this disease, of course, alcoholism, so we think it really probably has something to do with alcohol. Because what brings us in here is the alcohol consumption. Because if you drink alcohol enough, what happens is eventually the wheels start falling off your life. But they start falling off your life, presumably, or it seems to you, because of the alcohol consumption. You get arrested for DUI because of alcohol. You know, you get thrown out of the house, you were drinking. You know, I mean, stuff happens, you get fired because you were drinking. You don't really see that you're crazy even without the drink. You don't see that you're nuts without the drink. You just focus on the stuff that's happening to you that's making your life unmanageable because of the drink. So we named the disease after the thing for us, which is the only cure for the disease, which is consumption of alcohol. But of course, like it says in the big book, it says our real problem, our real disease centers in our mind, not our body. You know, and our disease, the real basis for our disease is that we're selfish, we're self-centered, we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on people's toes, they retaliate, the self will run riot. Those we usually don't think so, and above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And apart from that, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Seems absolutely normal. I mean, if you're an alcoholic, we all have the same vocabulary. In here, we all talk this way. We have an alcoholic language, sober. One day I'll have to write down all the vocabulary, the glossary of the alcoholic life. You know, who do they think they're fucking with? You know what I mean? They can't do that to me. They don't know who they're screwing with. Why me? Why is this always happening to me? You know, if only, yes, but. You know, I mean, I was an if-onlyer. I was a yes-butter. I was a you-don't-understander from the word go. We all use the same words. We use the same vocabulary. We think the same thing. You know, why are they doing this to me? They don't know who they're screwing with. The same thing that people use when they live a life of feeling sorry for themselves, when they live a life of feeling like they're victims, when deep down inside they hate themselves, when deep down inside they feel insufficient or unworthy to be even alive on the planet and scared that other people are judging them and knowing they're being judged all the time. I mean, that's the life we lead in this deal. We sit around and we say crap to ourselves, like, I don't give a crap what people think about me. I don't really care what they think about me. And all we do is every second of the minute of the day, we worry about how they're thinking about us, what they're thinking about. We buy cars that we can't afford, that we can't possibly afford without even thinking, because we know if we have that car, they'll like us, because it'll do something for us. We're constantly spending money on things we don't need to impress people we don't like, with money we don't even have, because we need it, because we're insufficient without the car, without the dress, without the boobs, without the buyer, without whatever it is out there that they're selling, we're buying. And somehow, some way, we know that our real problem is we just don't have money, or we don't have a girl, or we don't have a guy, or we don't have this, or we don't have that. And even when you shove all that stuff into you, and you got the Ferrari, you know what I mean? And you got the $100 million, you know what I mean? And you got the fans, and you got everything. You're still arrested for DUI in Miami Beach. You're still a flaming banana, you know what I mean? Because it doesn't matter that you're famous and you got hundreds of millions of dollars and you got the Ferrari and you got the girls and you got everything. You're still a worthless piece of shit, no matter how much talent you have. You know what I mean? I think this is relevant in the news somewhere. I read something about, something about somebody who was just arrested. It's all so clear to us. And you know what's the crazy thing? The guy it's happening to doesn't have a flipping clue. Doesn't have a flipping clue. Because he just buys a good lawyer and, you know, gets out. It's just, because he, you know what? Because it doesn't matter if you get 20 DUIs. If you can afford to have a lawyer, then you're in a sense managing your DUIs. You're still managing, you know, your life is not unmanageable because you got a lawyer. It's amazing how we can rationalize, how we can tell ourselves rational lies. And listen, this life that you and I used to live, that seems normal. That alcohol life seems the only normal life for us. So it seems to me that one of the things that has to be accomplished here is if alcohol consumption comes because we're restless, irritable, discontented, it would be a great idea to try to get to the point in your life where you're not restless, irritable, discontented. What do you think about that? That's all logic. You know, with the understanding that if you're not restless, irritable, discontented, you could add other words to that. I believe that doesn't run the full gamut of words. I think bored could be, I think lonely could be added to that. Angry, you know, right? You could add a whole, the grouch and the brainstorm. You can add a whole bunch of words. But if you can, whatever that is that happens to me that allows me to say something to myself like, I need a drink, whatever, you know, if I could just get rid of all that stuff where I could know serenity or peace, how about this thing? This is what they say in the book. This is the way they put it in the big book. Let me say chapter 5, here, right here, into how it works. When we sincerely took such a position, they're talking about, now we've already done this in the third step. Is the position of trusting in God. See, it says right here, perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. That's the basis we're supposed to be on, trusting and relying upon God. We turn our will and our lives over to Him. I'm talking about this because we're on step 9. You know, we've already done step 3, so I figure I'm talking to a bunch of people that, you know, we're past step 3. So you guys have already, if you've done step 3, you've already turned your will and your life over to God, right? Which means you've turned your will. Now, what's your will? Your will is, here's your will. You ask somebody, I like Jesse, he says, you know, Jesse comes up, he says, well, I feel like doing this. I said, what does it matter what you feel like? You know, your life is over. Your life is over. You've turned your life over. You know, you had your life. You were in charge of your life. You all were in charge of your life. You understand? You all had absolute charge of your life. How'd you do with that deal? You ran it into the ground. You're not in charge anymore. You're not the pilot. You're not, you know, this isn't God as my co-pilot. I'm sure God is very excited to be your co-pilot. You know what I mean? God's the pilot. You're the co-pilot. You know, you've turned your will. That means what you want to do, that's turned over. Everything you want to do, with all your plans, all your designs, everything you want to do, turned over. I'm just talking about the program. Listen, I know you may be sitting there saying, well, that's not what I think. I know that's not what you think. I get that. I'm just talking about the program of recovery. If you want to do the program of recovery, your will is over. It's over. It's over. Your will has been turned over. And just in case there's anything left in your life besides that's not covered by your will, that's taken up by your life. You're turning your will over. You're turning your life over to Him. That's the deal. That's what this thing is all about. I know that's what it's all about because it says so in the book. It says so in the book. In this chapter, it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. I love that word, utterly. I love the words they use in this thing. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You know, we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. The great fact is this and nothing less. You know, I like that. That God has become the centerpiece of our life, the central fact of our lives. With absolute certainty, we know He's living in our hearts. And I mean, there's like no wiggle room. No wiggle room. Now, when you get away from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and you get into the fellowship, this is the fellowship. Hundreds and thousands of alcoholics, most of which don't really want to do this shit anyway. Not because they're bad people, but because the nature of us is to be restless, irritable, discontent. And what's the chief characteristic? If you're an alcoholic, if you believe this book, our chief characteristic is defiance. You know what defiance is? Defiance is go to hell. Defiance is you tell them something, they say, hell no, I'm not going to do it. Screw you. Who do you think you're talking to? That's the chief characteristic of an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, you sit in the back of the room and you make fun of anybody talking in the front. You say, that guy doesn't know crap. I mean, that's what you do. You don't even do it because you're bad. You do it because that's the nature of it. That's what the disease looks like. The disease, you think the disease looks like what it looks like when you're drunk. Even normal people when they're drunk look drunk. That's not what the disease looks like. What the disease looks like is sitting in the room because you run your life into the ground. You don't have a clue. And you're judging everybody else and saying, this is bullshit, I shouldn't even have to be. That's what the disease looks like. It permeates your mind. It permeates your thinking. You somehow, some way, figure, it's like Messenger, what was his name again? Guy wrote Man Against Himself. Carl Menninger said, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Over any period of time, you can give them any amount of money, any amount of toys, any amount of anything in the world, any amount of talent, somehow, some way, they will figure out a way of destroying their lives, i.e. the guy I was just talking about. You know, a lot of you guys had good jobs, you had good wives, you had good husbands, you had good relationships, you had good parents, you had money sometimes, you had this, and you figured out a way of flushing the entire thing down the toilet, destroying your life and hurting other people. And while you were doing it, here's the cool part, while you were doing it, there's nobody that loved you more than you. You were your best fan. This is your best thinking on your best day, thinking about yourself before you thought about anybody else. This is your plan. And your plan, I mean, none of you guys plan to lose. Every step along the way, every relationship, every marriage, every job, everything you decided to do looked like this. Is this good for me? Yes, it's good for me. I'll do it. And you wound up in the toilet. So this is you planning your life, thinking about you, number one. So you see, so here's the deal. Now that you've surrendered, you're no longer in charge. You're going to turn your will and your life over to him. I mean, he couldn't possibly screw it up more than you guys have. You know, I mean, it couldn't get any worse, you know? So, I mean, that's the good part. So there it says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. So if you wake up in the morning and you're thinking about him, and you're thinking, what does my God want me to do, and how can I best do it, then you're sort of like pretty much on the right track. If you start thinking about what do I want to do, and what do I have to do, and what you're operating out of fear, then you're pretty much starting off already behind the eight ball. It says right here, when we sincerely took that position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him. There's an if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So, you know, if you're in this deal, you want to find out who he is, and you want to make sure you're close to him and you're performing the work he has before you, the work he wants you to do, not the work you want to do. We all know what you want to do. You know, rob, rape, and run, and go down to South Beach and have a good time. You understand about that, and buy the fastest car you can possibly do. Yeah, you know, that we understand that deal. That's why it says on page 29 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, that's why it's so important. That's why it says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. That's why it says we don't manage our own lives. No human power can fix us. Only God could and would if you sought. See to what your relationship with him is right. A great event will come fast for you and countless others. That's why it says on page 29 in our talks, it says each individual in our personal stories describes in his own language from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's why relationship with God is so important. That's why this whole thing is about developing a relationship with God. That's why the 11th step, when you finally do that, it says now you've got to develop it even more. You've got to improve upon it. That's why it says all that stuff. That's why it's all there. It's all about God and relationship with God. And you know, you miss that. You miss that deal. I mean, you know, you can do this. Hey, listen, for Alcoholics Anonymous, the only desire to be in this program is the desire to stop drinking. So if you want to just join the not drinking club, you can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. You'll stay stopped drinking maybe for 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. But let me tell you something. You can be stopped drinking and still miserable. But here's what happens if you do it the other way. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him, performed his work well. Here we go. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. What would your life be like? You know, I'll tell you, the thing I wish the most for you guys is that you get out of this thing more than just the not drinking. I mean, I can't explain it. You may not even understand it, and some of you probably do understand it. I can't explain to you how incredible life can be, notwithstanding problems. I'm not saying I don't have problems, and you still have problems. You all live in a problematic world. There's a lot of problems out there. When the fear is dissipated, when this stuff happens, it says, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. We became conscious of His presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. You know, I can't tell you what it feels like to live on the planet where you're not sitting around thinking about yourself all the time. You know, there's nothing wrong with going to meetings because you need a meeting. I spent 15 years running the meetings because I needed a meeting. You know, going to a meeting, feeling good after the meeting, driving my car, feeling good for about an hour, and then all of a sudden the craziness would start again. The telephone calls, the billboards, the TV, and all of a sudden, by the time I got to the next day, I needed a meeting again. I spent 15 years, and there's nothing wrong with that, going to meetings because I needed a meeting. Maybe 20 years. I don't know when it happened to me. I don't know when I woke up one day and I went to a meeting. I didn't go to a meeting because I needed a meeting. I went to a meeting because I thought there might be somebody there I could help. I don't know when it happened to me, when I woke up one day thinking about maybe there was somebody I could help today. I don't know when it happened to me that when the most important thing in my life became focusing on maybe somebody I could help. Where even if I didn't make any money, it wasn't a big deal if I didn't make any money. Even if I broke, it wasn't a big deal as long as I spent some time trying to help somebody else. I just don't know when it happened to me where the most important thing in my life was trying to help other people. And I felt good about myself and worthy about myself. I felt more worthy about myself broke without a dime in my pocket helping other people than when I had $1,000 in my pocket and I wasn't helping anybody. I mean, I can't even explain it, because if you don't understand, you just don't understand. If you don't get it, you just don't get it. And there's nothing I can say that can explain it to you. I'm just telling you, you may think you need a lot of money to be okay. A lot of money doesn't make you okay. You may think you need a new car to be okay. You may think you need a gal or a guy or more sex to be okay. That's not going to do it. You've had all that stuff and you've lost it and you're never okay. But I'm going to tell you something. You have the ability to be okay, all right, just fine, right this second. And it could be a permanent deal. I'm serious. It can be a permanent deal. I'm not just talking about, but you're waiting for the... It could be a permanent deal. It could be a long-term deal. And that's the thing that separates the men from the boys. That's the difference between the guys that are just hanging in there, you know, to pick up the medallion and getting applause and still going home lonely. And, you know, feeling lonely and bored and scared and worried. You know, I tell this story about driving in a car with my first sponsor, you know, and going to pick up a guy, you know, that he also sponsored named Bobby. And my sponsor's name was Bob. And I'll try to shorten up the story. And Bobby kept on slipping. I picked up white chip. I never drank again. You know, I'm not bragging. You know, I don't take any credit for that. It's just the way it happened. You know, I want to make sure there's somebody in here that knows that you can do that. You know, after a while, you start thinking that you got to slip, that it's mandatory to slip. You know what I mean? That you're supposed to slip. You know, no, you don't have to slip. You can actually, you can be crazy. You can do all sorts of crazy things, but you don't have to necessarily pick up a drink. And I'm one of those guys that picked up a white chip. Never drank after that, but at least up until now. But Bobby was one of my litter mates, and every 30 days he would drink. And so every 30 days we'd go off the bark up here, and we'd pick him up, and I'm talking about 30 years ago. And Bob, my sponsor Bob, would pick up Bobby, and we'd bring him back down, and we'd get him a new set of clothes, we'd give him a few bucks. He'd put him up, he'd take him to meetings, and then Bobby would promise it was never going to happen again. He'd be remorseful, he'd go to meetings, he was doing great, and then all of a sudden 30 days would come and bam, Bobby had disappeared. And then we get a call from Bark and we'd go pick him up again. And Bobby, it was like a countdown. he would say things, every once in a while, he would say things like, it's coming up on that time again. You know, he had like a timer, you know what I mean? That 30, he says, well, Russ, you're an alcoholic, but I'm an alcoholic, and I got that 30-day thing, you know what I mean? Which is a good excuse for drinking. You know, you don't have to take responsibility. It's not my fault. It's a 30-day thing. You know what I mean? And you see, I've got something different. You got near alcoholism. I got alcoholism, and like after 30 days, I got to drink, you know? And by the way, as far as I know, Bobby's sober today. But in any event, so one day we're driving up to pick up Bobby, and I'm an alcoholic, you know? And if you're an alcoholic like me, now I'm an alcoholic. Now I'm stark raving sober. I'm an alcoholic. I got everything you got if you're an alcoholic. Whatever craziness you got as an alcoholic, I got, and I'm not on medication anymore. You know, my medication was J&B scotch or beer or vodka. You know, I that was my medication. Some people's medication is smoking grass. Somebody's medication is coke, you know what I mean, or meth, you know what I mean, or pills, okay? My medication was scotch. It's the same deal. I was just down in that. That was my medication. And I didn't even feel alcoholism, because when alcoholism was like 50 miles on the horizon and coming up on me, I turned to my friend and said, I need a frickin' drink. And whack down a drink, and there would be no alcoholism. There would just be drunk, which is not alcoholism. It's just drunk. Sober people, normal people get drunk. You know what I mean? If you drink enough, you never have to experience alcoholism. I mean, the world, you know what they think alcoholism is? They see us drunk and they think, that's alcoholism. Maybe it is, and maybe you can't tell whether somebody's an alcoholic just because they're drunk. They can be a regular person. I'll tell you what alcoholism is. You start watching how they act when they're sober. You start talking to them and thinking about how they, you know, you and me. I'll tell you something. I don't know about you. I shake somebody's hands. I talk to them for 30 seconds and say, that guy's an alcoholic. I don't care whether he's drinking or not. You know, I shake somebody's hand, he looks at me and says, I'm going to get that son of a bitch. He doesn't know who he's fucking with. I say, hey, I got a drinker right here. I don't care if he's drinking or not. I know what I'm dealing with. I mean, alcoholism doesn't have anything to do with the booze. It has to do with the way you act and the way you think. Now, that guy's not drinking, he better have a drink. Guys like that are mad and angry and pissed off and talking bad about other people, you know, I say to him, I said, listen, buddy, in your case, I think a drink is in order. Because that's the only way you're ever going to get help. Just keep on drinking, you know? Because you're either going to drink or blow your brains out or something. If he ain't drinking, he's smoking, he's doing something. Because who can live that way? And that's what happens when you take away the deal. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm an alcoholic. I still got this disease, which goes on even after you take away the booze. And I'm keeping tabs on Bobby. You know, and I'm just watching this guy. He keeps on drinking after 30 days and everything like that. And I finally say to my sponsor, because I've been saving up on this, because my sponsor's only got like 20 years. He's obviously stupid, doesn't understand what's going on here. I said, you know, you ought to turn this thing around. This guy's a jerk. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He's a phony. We did this last month. We did this month before. We did this month before this. I've been taking tabs. I got photographs. I got 3x5 cards. I'm giving him an opening statement, you know, closing argument. I got all the facts on my side. I'm a lawyer. I got all sorts of degrees. I'm doing my argument. And you want to know something? I'm right. I'm 100% right. I'm alky right. You know what alky right is? If you disagree with me, you got to die because you're so stupid. You know what I mean? You shouldn't be allowed to live. And I'm just telling my sponsor, and I'm hammering them, and I'm doing what all alcoholics do. I'm repeating myself 50 times. You know what I mean? I'm doing my the argument of this and this, and we got to turn around and give me crap about us and blah blah blah. And, you know, I'm working out of a resentment, a sweat. I'm my own lynch mob. You know what I mean? Believe me, for me to get a resentment, I didn't get resentments out there. I used to come in here and get a resentment. That guy's talking too long. Why did that guy say that? You know what I mean? I'm just there, you know what I mean? Judging, and, you know, because if you're an alcoholic, you're given the God-given ability to notice that. I'll tell you what, you can just size up assholes from 1,000 miles away. You know, I used to sit there in the bar, you know what I mean? And I'd see some guy on the other end of the bar that I'd never seen before walk in with a good-looking blonde. Man, and I turned to my friend and says, look at that asshole. You know, you can just tell, you know what I mean? You just know you don't like the guy, you know, right away. And, you know, you know what that is? And you know what the guy sitting next to you says? Who's your alky buddy? He says, man, you're right about that. Because you know, because we congregate together. And you know what that is? When you're thinking like that and you're talking like that, and that's your whole life looking at other people, you know what that is? That's called, ready for this? Alcoholism. And it's a crummy way to live. But I don't know it's alcoholism because you know what it is. That's just my personality. That's the way I am. That's my normal way. That, you know, that way of thinking and acting seems normal to me. Seems comfortable to me. As a matter of fact, if in any way you try to point out to me it's bad, I get mad at you because I feel like you're putting me down. Because I take everything personally and everything. I got no way of getting, because this is the only way. I don't know of any other way. I don't do this on purpose. This is just the way I do it. This is the way I see it. This is the way I perceive everything. So I'm yelling at my sponsor, and I'm doing all that sort of stuff, and he's looking at me. We're going up, picking up Bobby. And I think I tire myself out, you know what I mean? And I say, and he says, are you finished? And I said, and of course I wasn't, because now I'm having an argument in my mind with the, because I got 50 people in my mind, because I'm doing that committee thing, I'm talking to the committee now. You know, because when that freight train of anger is going, you know what I mean, it doesn't stop until 5 miles down the road. I'm thinking about it until next week, next Tuesday, I'm going to bring it up at a meeting, you know, because you can't stop the thinking, you can't stop it. You have no control over your thinking, you have no control over crazy thinking. You know, if you're lucky, you run into a sponsor, you run into somebody, you go to a meeting where it stops the thinking just like that. Something, there's got to be some external force that stops the thinking because you can't stop it. You're not only powerless over the drinking, you're powerless over the thinking, over the bullshit. You can't do it. You can't stop it. You know, you may say to yourself, I got to stop thinking like this. It's driving me crazy. And then 30 seconds later, you'll pick it up again. You can't let go of it. You're like a dog with a bone. And so he says, are you finished? I said, yes. He says, no, are you finished? I said, yes, yes. He says, no, Russell, are you finished? I said, yes, yes, I'm finished. I'm finished. And so I'm saying, well, you know, what's he going to say? I graduated law school. I got all the facts. I got the photographs. I got the charts. You know what I mean? I'm right. The guy is, that's the way the guy is. What's he going to say? He hasn't even graduated the third grade, you know? He's a used car salesman from Chicago. What could he possibly say to me? And he looks at me, and this is what he says. He says, Russ. I said, what? He says, Russ. I said, what? What? He says, it doesn't bother me the way it bothers you. I look at him. I said, how can it not bother you? Everything bothers me. And you know what the problem is? I wanted everything he had, and he wanted nothing I had. Because he used to have what I had. And he worked 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous so he would never think or feel like me again. And I gave him all this logic, and he gave me AA magic. 9 years later, let me tell you how prevalent this disease is. 9 years later, working this program about as hard as you could work this program, going to the meetings, sponsoring people, doing step series. I call up my other sponsors, because my first one is Dive, Joe Snyder, because my wife, you know about her, you know. I got to watch out. She's listening to this stuff. She brought it up to me today. She said, did you call me a bitch in one of those tapes? You know? I swear to God, before I left there, Eric was there, she said, you know, I listened to your tape on the 8th step where you called me a bitch. I heard that. I said, well, you know, honey, what I was saying is that's, you know, when I, you know, during my alcoholic, that's the thinking, and it was wrong. You know, he says, I heard what you said. I heard that. I said, well, honey, you know, you're absolutely right. I said, how about if I ask them, will they give you an hour next week? Like as a rebuttal, you know what I mean? But in any event, you know, I pled guilty. I have to pay a fine or something. But in any event, so 9 years later, my wife had said, or done, you know, whatever she says, or, you know, whatever they do, you know, and she disrespected me or something, you know, whatever the heck happened. And I called my sponsor, Joe, and I said, you wouldn't believe what my wife did, you know. You wouldn't believe what just happened. I mean, I just had a big fight against some this and that, and she spent this, and she bought that, and she said this, and she said that, and blah, 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 blah. I get 15 minutes. I gave them chapter and verse specifics. She said this, and I said that, and she said this, and I said that. She did this, then did that, and all the whole bit, and I'm going nuts. And he finally says, after listening to all that, he says, well, why are you upset? I said, what do you mean? He says, well, why are you upset? I said, what do you mean, why am I upset? He says, why are you upset? I said, I just spent 20 minutes telling you why I was upset. She said this, I said that, she said this, I said that. You know, and then he says to me, and I did. I told him exactly why I was upset. I mean, you guys have been to discussion meetings, right? You've been to discussion meetings, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a discussion meeting where somebody's upset?
Yeah.
Do they tell you why they're upset?
Yeah.
They tell you in specific detail why they're upset. As a matter of fact, they'll repeat it 5 times and say, why does this guy shut up already? You know what I mean? You know, this is why they're upset, right? So I know how to tell somebody why I'm upset. I told him why I was upset. And then he says this to me. He says, that's not why you're upset. Now let me tell you something. If anybody knows why I'm upset, I know. Don't you know why you're upset? I know why I'm upset. I mean, there's anything I know from when I was a sperm, you know, why I was upset. You know what I mean? I know exactly why I was upset. I know why I was upset. I know what will fix it. I know why I'm upset. And this guy says to me, that's not why you're upset. And I go, that's not why I'm upset? He says, no, that's not why I'm upset. You're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. I'm just what I told all that stuff. He says, no, that's not why you're upset. He says, no. And then he shut up. So what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do when somebody says, it's your sponsor? And thank God I had a sponsor. And I had a close relationship with my sponsor. I love my sponsor. And I looked up to my sponsor. You know, that's a problem. You look up to somebody. And you want to learn from them. And they have some say something you don't want. And they say, that's not why you're upset. You can't dismiss that. You can't walk away from that. You can't even get mad at that. Because you're thinking in the back of your mind, maybe he knows something. Maybe he has the answer. So I say, well, Joe, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no. He says, do you know why I'm upset? You know, so why am I upset? He says, this is what he says. He says, well, do you really want to know? See, because he was a smart son of a bitch. He made me beg for it. You know what I mean? Okay. I said, well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? He said, listen, stupid. That's exactly what he said. He said, listen, stupid. He says, you're upset because you're upsettable. What is this, like Zen AA, you know? You're upset because you're upsettable. Oh, so exactly right. So exactly right. It had nothing to do with anything except it was me. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. My wife hasn't changed. Maybe she has. I don't know. I don't even notice it. She does stuff. I have guys that follow me around that, you know, they're married guys. They have problems with their wives. They're in my house. They see my wife say something to me. And she says, did you hear what she just said? And I said, no, what? It's like going over, I don't know, you know, she says something, I say, yeah, you're the worst husband in the world. I said, nah, guilty as charged. You know what I mean? It's the same life. It's the same stuff. It's the same bounce check. It's the same crazy world. It's the same immature people. It's the same earth. I just haven't noticed it. You know, when you think about it, at 9 years, my sponsor, Joe Snyder, said the exact same thing to me. And said the exact same thing and pointed the exact problem that my first sponsor said at 1 year. The guy at 9 years said, you're upset because you're upsettable. The guy at 1 year said, it doesn't bother me the way it bothers you. He said the same thing. He said, you know, the problem is we're living in the same reality. We're driving up to pick up the same guy who's done the exact same thing. The only problem is it bothers you. It doesn't bother me. You're upset. You're upsettable. It upsets you. It doesn't upset me. Now, what would you rather be, right or happy? How would you rather live your life? Now, you know what's amazing? I worked this program real hard, and at 9 years, after 9 years of working it, I had moved like a quarter of an inch. Like a quarter of an inch, and I was still baffled. And I was still saying, what are you talking about? It was still baffling to me, and I had been reading, and I had been teaching the steps. You understand what I'm saying? You know, and then all of a sudden, what is it, like at 20 years? All of a sudden, the fog lifted. One day I woke up, and all of a sudden, things had changed. That kind of deal. And so I have a, and so I have these voices, like you have these voices, like we all have these voices saying bad shit about yourself to yourself, you know? You know, all alcoholics do it, you know, they got this stuff, you know? You know, you're driving around, every once in a while you're driving around and you're just condemning yourself. You're just talking bad shit, you tell you, I don't care whether you're thinking about committing suicide or blowing your brains out or thinking about how you're never going to make it or you're not worthy, you know, or what's the use, you're never going to be okay, you're a piece of shit. I don't care whatever you're saying to yourself, but we all have that deal where we got some sort of voice somewhere, something may trigger it, or nothing may trigger it at all. You may just be riding around, you know, and all of a sudden here a thought goes across your brain, you're a worthless piece of shit. You look around to see who's telling you that crap, there ain't nobody in the car but you. That's your reputation about you with you. And so maybe you, you know, turn on the TV, maybe you turn on the radio, maybe you get into a conversation, you start texting somebody, you start living your life and doing your stuff, or whatever it is that distracts you from dealing with that crap. But what do you think? It goes like to Venus? Wherever that crap came from, it's still deep down inside of you. Where did that voice come from? And why was that voice there? And what happened? I mean, you know, and so one day I get divorced from my wife, my first wife. And they give me visitation rights with my little son. And one day I say to him, next Saturday I'm going to take you to the zoo. And he says, we're going to go to the zoo. I said, no, I'm going to pick you up at 10 o'clock. I'm going to take you to the zoo. I promise you. I promise you I'm going to take you to the zoo. And so that Saturday came, but the night before was Friday night. I went out with a gal named Sally. And that Saturday I wake up at like 8 o'clock in the morning, fully intending to take my son to the zoo. He's waiting for me to take him to the zoo. He's like 7 years old, 8 years old, whatever it is, waiting for me to take him to the zoo. And I get a call from Sally. You know what Sally says? Sally says, and I'm not a monster. I think I was a division chief in the state's attorney's office then or something. I'm a prosecutor. I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm doing my thing. You know, and she gives me a call, simple thing, and she says, listen, I'm going out on the boat today. It's Saturday with some of the girls. Would you like to come along? You understand, guys? We got some men in here, right? Sally calls me up. Get this. Now I'm supposed to go pick up my son. You understand? And she says, I'm going out in the boat. I got the beer with the girls. Would you like to come along? Now don't be telling me that wouldn't start that brain, you know, pumping. You know what I mean? Now you're thinking, right? I'm thinking. Boat. Sally, booze, maybe sex, whatever it is, you know, my son. Boat, Sally, booze, sex, my son. Man, I'll tell you, it was a struggle. It was a struggle, a moral dilemma. I must have just wrapped my brain around that, trying to figure out what the answer was. You know, my best thinking, my best alcoholic thinking. By the way, did I tell you I was selfish, self-centered? Well, I didn't know that. I thought I was a good guy. My best thinking, I wrap my brain about that, and I agonized about that maybe for, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds, and it was anchors away. So I called up my son, right? No. No. Because, you know, I started thinking, he won't even have a good time. He had a better time with his mother. And somehow, some way, I just forgot to call him. So I guess he was just sitting there waiting for his father to take him to the zoo. You know? But listen, but I was a good guy. I never hurt anybody. I didn't ever do anything wrong. I was a good guy. I was a good father. And I go out there on the boat, and I'm drinking. And you know, because somewhere deep down inside of me, you know, where I live, there's a little voice that's saying, you are some sort of bum. Because you know who lives their lives that way? Bums live their lives like that way. Irresponsible bum. I may have been an attorney. I may have had a three-piece suit, but I was a bum. And I'm going to tell you something. And I'll tell you, when you do shit like that, and you do crap like that, and you're not a psychopath, you understand what I'm saying? You know deep down inside what kind of worthless piece of crap you are. And you, let me tell you something. You keep tabs. The same judge, just like it says in the Bible, how you judge other people, you judge yourself. The same judgment you look at other people when they screw up, you're judging yourself deep down. And I'm going to tell you something. When you live a life like that, you do shit like that to people like that, I'll tell you something. You better drink. As a matter of fact, you want to know something? You got to drink. You got to drink to wipe out in your mind what the worthless piece of crap you feel you are. and what you're going to say to your son, and what you're going to say to that, and what are you going to say? When you live a life like that, the mail comes in, you rip it up before you look at it. When you live a life like that, you don't answer the phone. You check your caller ID. When you live a life like that, you see people on the street and you turn around and say, I hope he didn't see me. You live a life like that, your brain is populated by a million people in this world that you don't want to run into, you don't want to talk to, and you don't want to look in the eye, and you don't look anybody in the eye, because then they'll look inside of you and see where the worthless piece of crap you are. And when you live a life like that, you drink a lot because you're restless, irritable, discontented, and you feel like a piece of shit. And when you live a life like that, you got all sorts of voices like music going on in your brain telling you how you don't deserve to live, because who knows what a worthless piece of shit you are more than you. And of course you feel unusual and uncomfortable around people, and you feel like they're judging you because you know what a worthless piece of crap you are. And what you're really scared of is they're going to find out what a worthless, phony piece of crap you are, and you don't think you deserve to live. Now, of course, I'm not talking about you guys, because I can tell you guys don't have that problem. You're like a cut above. I'm talking about guys like me and the guys at my home group. You understand what I'm saying? So how are you going to get rid of that crap? And I'm going to tell you something. I told you one little story about my son. It sort of stands out of my mind. Now, if you think that's an isolated, you know, I would like to think that's an isolated event. I would like to think, but except for that, I was like perfect. I was like the Pope. I don't think so. That's the way I think. That's the way I determine what to do. That's my right or wrong. Just because I didn't kill anybody, didn't commit vehicular homicide, just because I didn't do something outrageous, you know, doesn't mean on a day-to-day basis, talking to people, that's the way my mind worked. If there was the right way of doing things and the decent way of doing things and the selfish, self-centered way of doing things that would benefit me, I vote for me. And I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. I explain to myself in no uncertain terms why I was right to do the thing I did. The only problem is if I can only convince that son of a bitch that lives inside of me that's saying all that bad shit to me all the time. I can't convince him. You know, that whatever, if you have a constitution, what do you have to have in order to get this constitutional ability to be honest with yourself? The problem is, if you got a conscience, what are you going to do about that? That's never going to go away, unless you drown it in vodka. And so that's one of the reasons I had to do these things. I didn't, you know, every one of these things are a humbling experience. It's humbling to write down the fourth step. It's humbling to write to talk about the fifth step. It's humbling to write down an eighth step. It's a humbling experience to go up to somebody that you've hurt and admit that you're wrong. You know, and tell them that you're wrong and you're sorry and then try to make amends for it. It's humbling. But for me, it was absolutely necessary. I cannot live on the planet. You know, I got to tell you something. I'm just going to end up like this. I quite honestly take it for granted now. I mean, I hate to say this, but it's true. For many, many years, I almost forget. You know, that's why it's so important for me to speak to newcomers. I forget there was a time in my life, maybe 10 or 15 years, where most of my day was comprised of thinking about other people in a negative way. Thinking about running into other people, what I was going to say to other people, what would happen if this guy, you know, phoned me, what would I would say if I ran into this person on the street, or thinking about things. I forgot that there was a time where I used to just feel crappy about them. All I would think about was other people in my life that like stuck to me. I couldn't get them out of my brain. And I'm so used to not worrying about people, not worrying about running into people, not worrying about just not being scared of people, not worrying about people, not worrying about being out and running into somebody or somebody phoning me or getting some mail. I live a life now that's so uncluttered by that stuff that I'm so used to living a life free of that stuff that I forget that this is a bonus from doing these deals. This from not having guilt or fear from working these steps. I forget, and of course through the 10th step and other steps we'll talk about, I don't accumulate them, but I forget this incredible life that I get to live now, where you're rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. I never had this. This wasn't a natural. This didn't come upon me just because I stopped drinking. I stopped drinking. I started thinking about these people even more. You know, I mean, this didn't. I mean, obviously, it helps to stop drinking. You stop getting the problems with the drinking. But I had to do this stuff. That's what the eighth and ninth step. It gives you back those relationships. Those ability to relate and not having fear of other people. That guilt gets rid of that. Guilt, if we drink because we're restless, irritable, discontented, if we're living lives of quiet desperation, and part of that is because of guilt we feel, because of the way we are. I was talking to somebody in here, I won't mention his name, Joey, you know what I mean? About sending off child support, which he's doing, you know what I mean? Which he's doing. He just showed me a picture of his child. I said, how do you feel? He says, he feels a lot. You feel a lot better about yourself, don't you? You feel, I mean, forgetting about the fact that your kids being fed, and you, the truth is, and maybe you'd like to send more, how do you feel about yourself? You know what that does to your esteem when you start doing the right thing and making amends? It's an incredible thing. So many people want to buy this thing on the cheap. They want to just not drink and go to meetings and figure that's the deal, but not have to pay the money, but not have to make the amends, but not have to approach the people and say, I was wrong and I was sorry. And what happens is what they're buying is temporary physical sobriety, but they're missing the great, they're not hitting the sweet spot on this deal. They're missing the whole thing, you know? They're giving up the greatest thing in the world to settle for something so much less because they're not doing 8 and 9. And that's what I want for you guys. I mean, I wish everybody in this room, and that would be the greatest prayer I would have, that everybody in this room experienced what I experienced in this deal. You know, I mean, I would just love to, I mean, I could be dead 50 years, you know, it doesn't matter. I would love to every one of you guys to be cheering me one day, saying the same crap I'm saying about your own personal life, and looking to a bunch of faces and saying, listen, I'm telling you, this stuff is real. There's concrete underneath those lily pads. This is serious stuff. You guys can be rocking in the fourth man. I want every one of you guys to have that deal. You know, I mean, I don't want you to believe this crap when you go to other rooms and people are talking about, you know, doom and gloom and the fourth step's going to kill you and there's a bunch of shit, just don't drink and go to meetings. I want to tell you something. There's some serious, incredible stuff, remarkable stuff. The big book is right. They're not lying to you about this thing. If you do this thing properly, thoroughly, follow the path. So thank you very much.